Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nintendo World Report Connectivity Episode 319. I'm your host, John Reardon. Neil is out this week visiting family, so I'm joined instead by connectivity editor and frequent co-host, Alex DeFritis.
Hey, John, do you know what Hitler and Fire Emblem and marijuana have in common?
Is it 420?
It's 420.
I had a friend in high school who, I guess I still have a friend, he's still alive, I have nothing against him, whose birthday was also on 420.
Mm.
So that was, that got the same jokes every year.
Yeah, it always happens, and I always get a kick out of it. Yeah. So yes, we are recording on 420.
Wait, what about Fire Emblem has to do with 420?
So it came out in Japan on... Well, I mean, of course, it only came out in Japan, the first game.
Oh, like the first one? Okay.
Yeah. And then also Path of Radiance came out 15 years later.
Good for them.
Yep.
It's like the opposite of the Advance Wars release problem. Like, Advance Wars causes, like, horrible world events, and, like, Fire Emblem just causes everybody to get high.
I think there's some other things, too. I believe Lucina, one of the characters in Awakening, her birthday is on 420.
We are going to talk. It was a weirdly kind of busy week for like news type stuff.
Yeah, we had games prepared to talk about, but like a lot of stuff happened this week that's probably just more interesting for you to listen to and for us to talk about.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that instead.
Yeah. So I'm just going to start Sonic Origins. This is actually, I think, the most recent story of all these. Sonic Origins got its release date, new trailer and a bunch of details and stuff like this. But the thing that everyone is fascinated by, the base game is going to MSRP at $40 in the US. It also has some DLC options or some like super duper bonus edition options as laid out by a very handy and not at all confusing chart. And people are a little up in arms over this for a few different reasons. There is, of course, the question of are these games worth $40? Which in my opinion, they're not, but that more comes down to not liking any of them than anything else. But then also, there's some weird, like, I want to say, like, predatory, but in a very inconsequential way, practices yeah. to the way this is being done.
It's like predatory in the same way that, like, a house cat can kind of be predatory.
Yeah.
Like, they're a little wild, but, like, they're not going to hurt you.
Yeah, like, you're not actually in danger, but, like, you kind of wish they would stop.
Right.
So you can get the base game, and that comes with the game. Mm-hmm. Now, if you pre-order that base game, you also get 100 bonus coins, which are coins, not rings, and that bothers me.
And then in the graph, it's like circled off with a ring and not
right,
a coin.
Yeah,
so it's very confusing.
That's questionable. You also get mirror mode unlocked, which I assume the fact that they say unlocked means that like you can unlock it in the base game.
Yes.
But it's like already unlocked. And then you get letterbox background. I have no idea what that means. But at some point, you're going to get a like kind of more of a widescreen background. Is it what for behind the game if you're playing in 4x3?
I don't understand, because isn't like the opposite for 4x3? You don't get letterboxing. You get the other thing, the is pillar boxing, is that what's
called? Oh, sure, but maybe, like, do you think they mean, like what goes behind the 4x3 image, like the border?
Maybe?
Because they say background, so, like, I'm thinking maybe, because I know you can play in classic mode and it plays in 4x3.
But a letterbox isn't a background, it is a lack of image.
Well, this is a letterbox, but yes, oh, yes, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Where the letterbox describes the absence of image, not
right.
the image itself.
I'm trying to grasp.
Okay,
what this
here's
means.
A question. Is a letterbox background a 4x3 image?
I don't know. The only thing that's coming to my mind right now is the fact that the movie just came out about a month ago, and like movies are letterboxed if you watch
that's
them
true.
On a 4:3 TV.
So maybe it's I don't know what this means, but apparently you get it if you pre-order the game. So get those pre-orders in.
They really needed to like release a video, like a 2-minute video explaining.
They had
everything.
A trailer, and yet I still don't.
Yeah.
Like none of this was answered for me. There is also a premium fun pack, which is like an add-on DLC that adds hard mode, also gives you the letterbox background, even if you didn't pre-order it.
No, it says hard missions.
Hard missions, not hard mode.
I'm not sure
mode.
If those are new levels or like remixed levels or
but
hard
whatever
mode.
They are, they're difficult.
Right.
And then you get the letterbox background.
Yes, that's also included.
Which is weird because that's the only thing from that pre-order bonus that you get with this premium fun pack. So that's odd that that's in there. But not nearly as odd as the fact that you get character animation in the main menu, camera controls over the main menu islands, character animation during music islands. So I'm assuming that on the main menu, there are maybe static characters in the base game, but if you get this DLC, they move?
What I'm imagining in my mind is Sonic's iconic idle animation happening in the main menu. Like, where he's just kind of tapping his feet and looking at you, coming like, come on.
Yeah.
And maybe he just stares blankly into your soul if you don't pay for the premium fun pack.
Maybe just unmove. Oh, you know what it could. Okay, so you know, like the classic Sonic logo where Sonic like comes out and like wags his finger at you.
Yeah, yeah.
What if you don't buy the DLC, like he just never comes out.
Right.
Like he just stays inside the logo and he's like, no, pay up.
That's a great point. Or maybe it's just Sonic and then like other characters come out if you get the pre-order. I don't know. It's not well described. While also trying to incentivize you into, like, this seems like a graphic, like, created for the singular purpose of making you pissed off, because it doesn't incentivize you to buy it. It doesn't, like, really sell itself.
Well, and it also implies that at some point they were, like, working on the game, and, like, somebody put an animated character in the main menu, and then someone was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Not in the base game, Frank. That's DLC.
They have to at least commit to buying it before it releases.
Yeah, like
we're not just
going to give it away.
Yeah,
not for. I hope this animation's really good. It's like it's not just like two frames of Sonic tapping his foot.
This is the Christian Whitehead team, right? Like,
well, that's kind of unclear. We know that it's that engine.
OK,
I don't know that we've he confirmed the engine was part of it. Shows you how closely I follow, you know, the Sonic news circuit. But I don't want to get too distracted because the next thing on the list is camera controls over the main menu islands. And
I don't
what does this mean? What do you imagine this means?
So this is what I'm picturing. If you ever played Donkey Kong Country, there's an island which is also like your menu through the levels.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm imagining for Sonic Origins is that if you pay for this premium fun pack, you can like tilt the right stick to like get a different
angle. To like rotate the island.
Yeah, to slightly rotate the island. It's like that, when in Smash Brothers Brawl, when you'd use the C stick to like move around the character select panel.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
I'm not saying that's what this is, but that's what's.
I mean, that's the best.
That's the image that's coming to my mind.
That's the best argument I've heard. And then we also have character animations during music islands. I don't know what a music island is, but they won't have any character animations.
I'm guessing the music islands is like their way of showcasing like, maybe a music library.
Like the sound test.
Yeah, the sound test.
Huh. Maybe they dance to the music.
Well, if you get the animations, then sure.
Right. Yeah, not in the base game. You poor bastards. But wait, there's more. There's another DLC called the Classic Music Pack, and this gives you additional music tracks from the Mega Drive and Genesis titles, I assume for like the sound test mode.
Yes.
And
here's the other thing, more than just like the weird placement it has on this graph, is that it's coming soon. Like, aren't these files that you have that you've had for decades?
Right.
What is keeping you from just adding them?
That's true. Yeah. Like based on this graphic, it would appear that camera controls over the main menu islands will not be available at launch. That is coming in a future update.
Yeah.
It's not ready.
You can play through the entire game if you've pre-ordered this, and then maybe never see the camera controls.
It adds replay value, you know, because you're going to finish the game, you're going to be done with it, and then you're going to see that update hit, and you're going to be like, you know, I've always wondered what the back of those islands look like.
It's also, like, perfect for like, YouTubers and content creators for that sweet, sweet content, because you can do a review, you can talk about the game, and then a couple months later, boom, you can talk about the camera controls for 10 minutes.
Well, yeah, is it even fair to review this game before this additional content has been released? Like, are you really reviewing the complete package?
Yeah, I feel like
merely a shell of what Sonic Origins will one day become.
I feel like it's the same debate as when, like, you know, if you haven't played the entire game to credits, it's going to be the same thing with this. Like, if you haven't really experienced Sonic Origins until you've been able to control the camera over the main menu islands.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, it's like No Man's Sky. Like, it's Sonic Origins at launch is not going to be the same game that Sonic Origins once the premium fun pack hits.
Yeah.
And don't even get me started on the classic music pack.
I mean, these are the origins. This is just the beginning.
Yeah. There's so much more. And then the final tier is the Digital Deluxe Edition, which gets you the main game, hard missions. It gets you all of the premium fun pack and the music pack. It does not get you the 100 bonus coins or the mirror mode unlocked. You can only get that by pre-ordering it. Or the letterbox background.
Yeah.
That is also, whatever that is, it's not included in this.
So if you buy it day one, you wouldn't be getting those things. But if you do pre-order, you do get them.
Yes. The only way to get everything is to pre-order the Digital Deluxe Edition.
Some people are going to, like, miss out on that letterbox background.
Yes, and that would be tragic, whatever it is, I'm sure.
If you're invested in Sonic and the letterboxing effect, then you need to hop on it now.
What makes this predatory is the fact that, like, clearly these are all things, like, they're just basic user interface things.
Yes.
That were cut from the game so that they could be sold separately for some reason. But also, to get the Digital Deluxe Edition is $5 extra. It is not a lot of extra money. And B, none of these things matter at all.
Right.
But also, why not, if you wanted to charge $45, why not just charge $45 for the game? Like, was there some focus testing that told them that, like, no, people will only pay $40 for the base game? We're going to have to really incentivize that additional five if we want to make the full 45.
I mean, it is a pricing technique to be like, oh, you know, the medium combo costs $5, but the large combo is only 30 cents more. So might as well just get the large, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
I think that's the pricing strategy here.
Yeah, like, nobody's going to buy the standard edition.
Yeah.
Everybody's just going
to... It's $5.
But you know what would also cause nobody to buy the standard edition? Is if it was just $45 and you got everything. Like, I don't think that this is going to get them more sales, right? Like, there's nobody who wasn't going to buy this who's like, well, since it's only 40 instead of 45, I'll dip my toe into these Sonic games.
Maybe you feel more special as a consumer because you got 100 bonus coins.
Maybe. I feel upset because they're coins.
Be hilarious if they were rings and, like, you just start Green Hill Zone with 100 rings and then you lose them immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what does it matter? The hell, rings are literally worthless.
Yeah.
So yeah, Alex, are you gonna buy the Sonic Origins collection?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
Last year, I committed to myself because I've never been a real Sonic fan. I've tried multiple games growing up. I played Sonic Adventure 2. I played the Sonic Advance games, and I just, like, even as a child, I couldn't get into them, and so I got Sonic Mania for free via the Epic Games Store last year, and I committed a couple hours to just, like, I'm going to learn to enjoy Sonic, and nothing clicked.
Yeah, that's the best one.
Yes, that's the best one. This is supposed to be the one that, like, especially in modern terms, is the best one to start with. I've just kind of resigned myself to not enjoying Sonic. But I do respect Sonic as a franchise. You don't see anybody creating Mario OCs, but there are tons of Sonic OCs.
I mean, somebody made Waluigi. And Waluigi is 100% a Mario OC.
Nintendo paid for that OC.
Yeah, they stole it. They didn't write "Do not steal" under their OC, so Nintendo stole it. I'll be honest, I'm tempted to get this purely because I already can play Sonic 2 in three different ways on my Switch.
Yeah.
And I'm tempted to have a fourth just so I can line them all up on the main menu and have four different versions of Sonic 2.
And just take a sacred screenshot of all of them.
Yep. And then delete them all, except for the Genesis app, because, you know, that there are like Shining Forces on there and I like Shining Force. But
I do think this is a very smart move, though, to release this kind of paired. Not exactly with the movie, but, you know, riding that wave. Sure. And I'm interested to see what Nintendo does for Mario once the Illumination movie comes out. Like, do they do a new game or do they do a collection like this?
Yeah, I guess they could put All-Stars back out.
And love it or hate it, like, we didn't get the letterbox background for 3D All-Stars.
No, no. And it's, you know, with this, nor did, like, I think they should do... They should do an All-Stars collection, and if I pre-order it, I should get 100 bonus rings. It's like, cool, what can you do with those? Nothing. They're from a different game. Thank you.
Maybe you can, like, finally redeem them in Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, whatever the next one is.
There you go. It all circles back around. I think that's enough about Sonic. Let's get all of our bad news out of the way together.
Sure.
Nintendo is in a little bit of hot water. They have a complaint from the National Labor Relations Board that's against both Nintendo and their staffing agency, Aston Carter. There aren't a ton of specifics over what this is, but a lot of just like bad employee relations practices. So like it cites discharges, firing, stuff like that, and refusal to hire. Coercive statements, which can be threats, promises of benefits that you're not getting and stuff like that, retaliation, discharge, discipline in reaction to something, coercive action, which is like misuse of surveillance and stuff like that. We don't know a lot about what this is yet, but of course this comes on the heels of plenty of other companies facing allegations from their workers. I do think it's worth pointing out, it's unclear right now how much of this is focused specifically on Nintendo and how much is focused on their staffing agency.
Right.
And then it's also like I think to some degree we should expect this. And that doesn't mean it's good or acceptable. If you've ever worked in the workforce, you are familiar that you will encounter a bad boss at some point.
Yeah, especially if it's a large enough company.
Yes, this stuff
is... There's only
so
many departments with good bosses. You're going to run into a bad one.
Yep, this stuff is bound to hit in a company that large. We don't know much about it yet. I will point out that, like, so far, and it sounds like I'm, like, defending them, and I'm not. But just, you know, for the context thing of... Because I've already seen people being like, oh, like, you know, Activision's getting in trouble for stuff and Nintendo's doing the same thing. This does not appear, based on what we have so far, to be that level of issue.
From what I'm reading, none of it has pushed somebody to the point of suicide.
Right. Yes. This is more like traditional bad business practices.
Yeah.
As opposed to like the bad business practices where the state that you're operating in decides to sue you. Right. So we'll see where this goes. Definitely worth keeping an eye on. But for now, there's just not enough information to draw any conclusions. And so I don't want to draw any in any direction.
Something to always keep in mind with Nintendo is they're a very secretive company. And there's a lot of NDAs being signed left and right. So the reason why we don't hear about allegations as much with them is probably less because they're goody two shoes and probably more because they keep things under wraps really, really tight. Be careful when like giving them too much of the benefit of the doubt. Like it's something's bad is going down like behind the scenes. I can almost assure you of it.
Yeah. Yeah, we just don't have enough information right now to know exactly what that might be. I should point out, because I skipped over this, but this does, some of this appears to be allegedly them interfering with like their workers organizing, like into unions and things like that, which has been a major push across the video game industry over the last few years to unionize. Because if you haven't noticed, game developers get screwed over constantly.
Yeah.
And unionizing seems to be a reasonable solution to that, which I don't disagree with. So, but yeah, obviously there are plenty of companies that would rather their workers didn't do that, because they sure would like to keep abusing them. And so this appears to maybe be related to that. But once again, we're very early in this story.
I just think it's good, even though we don't have all the information and we're not like fully equipped to talk extensively about it, I do think it's good to bring it up just so that you have it in the back of your mind.
Yep. Yeah, it's worth watching. This will probably not be the last you hear of this. Hey folks, this is John from the future. While I'm editing this, I did just want to quickly follow up this conversation and say that Nintendo did put out a statement today, when I'm editing this on Thursday, saying that the employee this allegation came from was terminated due to violating a NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, and for no other reason, according to Nintendo. Whether that's true, you know, obviously remains to be seen, but that is their statement on it. They also claim to have no knowledge of any employee organization efforts. So, once again, we don't know how much of that is true, but it's worth including their statement on it. Okay, back to the episode. But from there, let's move on to some really cool news, some very unexpected news. Xenoblade 3, a game that was announced as a bit of a surprise to be coming out this September, is for some reason coming out in July, which is a very rare occurrence of the anti-delay.
Yeah.
Which just like never...
I can't
this
even think of the word.
Happens. Yeah.
We have delay, we have postpone. What do you call something that is
an advance?
Forward. Yeah, advance.
We're giving you an advance on your Xenoblade? Yeah.
Hey, did you hear, not to like make things a bummer again, but did you hear that maybe this was a move? I'm not saying that this is actually what happened, but people are saying that it's very convenient that Xenoblade got brought up in the schedule right after the allegations. From NLRB.
I had not seen that, but it does. I mean, it certainly does have an effect on Twitter.
Yeah. I think people are making that comparison because Overwatch had a similar thing go down because of the controversies that they're going through right now. And they had released like a character trailer right in the middle of it.
Yeah. I don't know that Nintendo's that clever.
I don't think they are either. Here's the only scenario where I might see that being the case, is that this was a video they had ready for whatever their June Direct, E3, whatever you want to call it. This was a video they had ready as like a bombshell announcement for that. And they had all this bad PR happen. And so maybe they released this video early just as a way to mitigate that.
My counter to that would be that this so July 29th is fairly soon. There's only so late you can announce a release date and still have time for like stores to take pre-orders and make orders from distributors and all of that logistical stuff to go down. I feel like if they wanted to release it July 29th, this was kind of when they needed to announce that, yes, regardless of what else was going on.
I can totally see it being just a completely innocent, this is when we were going to release this video anyways.
Yeah.
But just everything that's going down with Blizzard specifically has just made me a little bit more eagle-eyed about,
yes,
this sort of thing.
Absolutely. I will also, I'm pretty sure those allegations are exclusively against Nintendo America.
Yes. I think you are completely correct about that. So that would almost have no effect on Xenoblade 3.
Yeah, and I can't imagine that they would be able to convince NCL to to move up a Xenoblade, because
right,
I'm sure
to cater to their own specific PR issues.
Well, I assume I think the more realistic thing is probably that something else shifted. Like, obviously we had like we've had some release date shakeups already this year from Nintendo. We had Advance Wars getting delayed indefinitely. We had Zelda getting delayed out of 2022. So
yeah, these are really good points.
They may be reassessing what, like, everything releases at a specific time for a reason. And
we've kind of known that Nintendo usually keeps a couple of games in their back pocket to, like, release whenever they need to. It's just so bizarre that a brand new game, a giant JRPG, gets moved up this far in advance.
And I think it may, there have been rumors that this game's been, like, this game is done.
It must have gone gold months ago.
I think it's maybe been done for a while. That's all totally speculation. No insider knowledge on that. Just, I think it may have been done for a while. And I think the fact that they can just be like, you know what? Move it to July. I think that supports this idea that, like, they were holding it for the holidays. They needed a game in here. Though I don't know that they did need a game in July.
Yeah, because July's pretty stacked.
Yeah, July is busy, and
or
as
June,
some people have pointed out
as well.
Yeah, it's like the summer is looking pretty good. And as some people pointed out, like Live Alive comes out a week before this.
It's Live Alive.
Sure. It's a
Neil
bad
taught
name.
Me that on this particular podcast.
I'm gonna call it Live Alive.
Live Alive. That is a more fun name.
Yeah, like shake it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's only a week gap. It seems weird. I mean, a brand new Xenoblade and a HD 2D remake of Live Alive, they're not exactly competitors, but they are operating in the same space to the point where it's odd that they're only separated by 1 week.
Yes. And I mean, Nintendo has money in both of them.
Yeah.
Probably more in Xenoblade, but like it's not like these are two completely unrelated. Like, Nintendo knows that Live Alive. Nintendo knows when that comes out and probably financially benefits from it doing well. So it is strange. I agree that they're not totally the same audience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like there's overlap. Like, I'm not going to get Live Alive. I'm going to say it different every time. I'm not going to get it. But I know a lot of people who want both that and Xenoblade.
I think Octopath Traveler came out at a similar time. I wonder if that sales data, it'll be interesting to see Live Laugh Love's sales data, you know, a couple months afterwards and kind of compare. Same thing with like Xenoblade. Like, Xenoblade 2 came out in December, but Definitive Edition, the remake of the first one, that was also a summer game, right?
Looks like it was May.
Okay.
End of May.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if they, after looking at some sales data, decided Xenoblade is more of a summer game.
It's just got that energy to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you, well, and it makes you wonder, I mean, September isn't exactly a holiday release date, but it is kind of in that range. It makes you wonder what else is happening at the end of the year that they feel confident moving Xenoblade out of the back half of the year.
They had to make space for Advance Wars, man. They just had
That's true. And they could put Advance Wars out. They're going to put Advance Wars out on like September 11th or something like that.
Oh, God.
Because I was like, they could put Advance Wars out in September.
Not
but
again.
Like, I mean, who knows? We've, you know, there's still those mythical Wind Waker and Twilight Princess remakes.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard rumors of Metroid Prime remakes for the past 20 years. I don't think Metroid Prime 4 is this holiday by any means. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they have.
Breath of the Wild 2 could just get advanced up to
That's true.
August.
Maybe they're just delaying everything because they're like, boy, people sure like it when we put things out earlier.
Yeah.
And they'll just keep doing that. I'm jazzed. I love this franchise and was not planning to have it this early, but I'm excited. Though now I need to force myself to finish Future Connected.
I guess we should talk a little bit about the trailer. I know we've only been talking about the release date.
Oh, sure.
What did you think about it? Because it seems very Xenoblade. It looks like you can morph with people. You might have 7 party members at the same time.
Yes. Which, I mean, that's not that. So Xenoblade 2 was 3 party members. But in reality, each one of those people also had a blade. So yeah, you had 6 people cluttering up the battlefield.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say, like, holy crap, the user interface during battles is somehow messier than Xenoblade 2. So much happening anytime there's a fight, and I'm sure everyone's yelling in various accents. Mm-hmm.
You have to appreciate the confidence, man. Like, they put together that UI and are like, this is so good. We're going to release it early.
Yeah. Yeah, it's done. It's ready. Oh, but the map will still suck. That's what they were like. They're like, listen, we have till September. We're going to take all the time between July and September to really get this map working, because that was something people complained about. And then Nintendo was like, no, we're putting it out in July. Yeah. I guess we'll release it as is. It's one of those things. Xenoblade trailers rarely give you an idea of what the plot is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's 2 nations at war, and I'm pretty sure one is the Xenoblade 1 nation and one is the Xenoblade 2 nation.
It's all people speaking in different UK accents about Destiny or whatever.
Yeah, it's just random non sequitur lines, and then like maybe a robot shows up. So there's so little you can draw from it.
And there's something really, really big in the background.
Did you play Xenoblade 2?
I played maybe the first 5 hours.
Okay. Only 95 more to go. I mentioned on Twitter, because Xenoblade was trending, and I was like, hey, Xenoblade X is cool. And that got a bunch of likes. And it's really just making me once again wanting to be like, man, I wish they'd just remake Xenoblade X or give me a sequel to that one. Because I love the mainline Xenoblade, but man, I want more Xenoblade X.
Yeah, I'm very happy that I was able to nab that for under like $45
before. Have you started it yet?
Of course not. Are you kidding me?
This game, can't wait for a Switch remaster.
No, that's not the case. It's just that this year has been like pretty full of games that I've been really itching to play. I've been playing a lot of Triangle Strategy. I'm trying to finish that up. I had to put it down for some review games and other stuff. And then, you know, we've got the 3D Zelda Game Club coming up.
Are we recording that next week?
That is next week, yes. Majora's Mask is next week.
Yeah. I should play some more Majora's Mask.
Yeah, side note, prep your questions for next week.
Yeah, send us your emails about Majora's Mask, whatever version you have or have not been playing. I don't think I'm halfway through it yet. I mean, I can binge that game, but yeah, I need to get back on that. Also, I listened back to the Star Fox Zero 5th anniversary episode. And for those of you listening, this episode will come out on Star Fox Zero's 6th anniversary. So happy birthday, Star Fox Zero. You should go back and listen to that episode if you haven't. I'm pretty sure it's like 250 something. And it's good. Me and Neil just go, like, because we both covered that game extensively from its like announcement through launch and review and all that. We just go through the entire kind of history of how it got to where it was and a bunch of conspiracy theories. And it's a good episode. And if you want us to do more episodes like that, you should let us know, because I kind of think we should. But it just means we have to pay attention to anniversaries. There was a discovery made of what appears to be a official Nintendo Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance emulator for Switch. We have independently been able to dig into that and are able to confirm that it does appear to look legitimate. Now, the fact that Nintendo has emulators for Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance, duh.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And also, like, there's a caveat of, like, not every game that was listed is going to appear. It's just these are the games that were tested.
Right. This is a thing that they are messing with. You could even extend that further to say not all of those platforms may appear.
Sure.
Because guess what? They had a Game Boy emulator, or they had a Game Boy Advance emulator for 3DS.
Yeah.
We all know how that went.
Yeah.
But yes, this does appear to be legitimately a Nintendo made thing.
Oh man, are you saying that they're going to lower the price of the Switch and give us all like Game Boy Advance games that no one else is going to be able to play?
Ooh, that would be great if there was an ambassador program.
Yeah, the Switch ambassador program. Let's make that it happen.
They'd have to give out so many. I mean, when they did that with 3DS, they had to give it to like 10 people.
Yeah.
Now it'd be, you know, 10 million.
Not even 10 million. It's like way more than that.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking people who bought it within the first 5 minutes. That's the cutoff point for the ambassador program on Switch. You get Minish Cap.
That's a good bonus.
It is. It's still my default way to play Minish Cap is on my 3DS. This is a thing that theoretically exists. The question is, assuming these are all coming to NSO at some point, all of these emulators, what format do you think this will take? Because obviously there are already two tiers of NSO. Mm-hmm. Do you think they split them up? Like, do some go to the base? Do some go to the expansion pack? Do they all go to the expansion pack? How are you imagining this happening?
Yeah, we were talking with Neil in the Slack, and he mentioned that maybe Game Boy Color shows up in the base NSO, and that expansion pack gets Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. Because putting them all in the expansion pack does seem a little wrong.
I don't know. Like
is Game Boy, are Game Boy games a premium product now?
I don't know. But it does make, I mean, if Nintendo currently has a problem where people don't see the expansion pack as worth it, would add it, let's say they added all three to the expansion pack, like would that help? Or would the fact that none of it is in the base ultimately hurt them? Because I do feel like the base is kind of worth what you're paying for it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since like they're kind of still trickling out games for it. Not often, but like technically.
Here is my perspective. Is that the NSO has like the attention span for the NSO is very short. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing where you need to add fuel to the fire very often in order to keep the buzz going and in order to generate the conversation, in order to generate people to word of mouth so that people end up buying these subscription programs. Yes. And so Game Boy and Game Boy Advance showing up for each will be able to add fire to both. So if you're just curious about Game Boy games, if you're very nostalgic for that platform, then you're going to buy that one. And if you are a man of culture or woman of culture or a general person of culture, you're going to spring for the Game Boy Advance on the expansion pack. My point being that you need to be able to like keep on generating some sort of buzz. Yes. In order to make this thing keep going. It's here today and it's gone tomorrow as far as the buzz for this program goes. So that's what I see these additions doing.
Well, and I think like the way they've handled, like regardless of how the initial perception of the expansion pack was, I do think the way they've handled the release schedule for the N64 games has been like perfect, because they've essentially just every month they release a new one on a pretty good pace. And so it does kind of keep that awareness there. Where I question if they even need to put anything in the base pack is like the base NSO is also just how you play games online.
So it doesn't need any extra because it's always right. Gonna have so it's, that.
It's kind of like if you're gonna play games online, you have to have this. And like the stuff that comes with it is a bonus.
Yeah, whereas, and the expansion pack does need an extra billboard.
Right. The expansion pack is like you are getting that for these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like the expansion pack is the emulators, whereas NSO is online play plus emulators. And cloud saves, I guess, most of the time. So I guess I kind of agree that like they should split it up, but I don't know if they need to. And I guess maybe it also depends on what games are in this. Cause like, I mean, you and I were talking a little bit before the show. Game Boy Advance games, we can think of a, we can give you some Game Boy Advance games.
Yeah.
Great, just an incredible platform. It gets a little hairier as you go back. And I know people have nostalgic for them, but I think for both, like, you and me, that was a platform that maybe we didn't, at least original Game Boy, was a platform we didn't interact with a ton until later, like until it wasn't current. Right. And it's a platform that I've kind of had trouble getting back into. It reminds me of the NES in a lot of ways, where a lot of the stuff that's on there is like stuff that you like on a later platform, but it doesn't work as well.
Right.
And so it can be hard to go back to if you didn't grow up playing it.
I agree. I mean, I don't want to go too far in that direction because I know there's plenty of people who would be super happy to play, I don't know, was it Gargoyle's Quest or like some of these rare Game Boy games.
Yeah.
That might be easy for Nintendo to put up. There's Mole Mania. That one's kind of hard to come by. It's a pretty interesting game. I've been enjoying that on 3DS the few times that I've played it. So I don't want to discount the Game Boy entirely. But if you were to press me, yes, the GBA has a much better library.
Yeah. And so maybe it wouldn't be that bad to throw. They could really play it safe and literally just throw Game Boy to the base NSO and then do Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance on. Because once you get into Game Boy Color, like then you start to get, you know, you've got two solid Zelda games. You have Link's Awakening on base Game Boy, but that's a weird one because it's already available on Switch.
And Game & Watch.
And on Game & Watch. And, like, there's also a Game Boy Color version of it. That definitely feels like one of those games that they would put on there twice.
Yeah.
Because Nintendo loves doing that. But outside of that, I mean, you know, you've got your Mario Lands, which are kind of divisive on, I think most people like the second one, but like the first one's a bit divisive. And you have three Donkey Kong Land games, which are like super technically impressive and also bad.
It's so funny to me how like often they came back to the whole, let's try and do Donkey Kong Country on handhelds, but like way, way worse.
Yeah. And they were always
Land on, was it Color or just regular?
There was a Land trilogy on original Game Boy.
Yeah.
That were like, they weren't directly, like they weren't just ports of Donkey Kong Country. They were made like as their own individual games. And they did a really good job of preserving a lot of the art, even though they were in black and white. But they're just not, like, the level design is just kind of bad. They do get a little better as they go, but yeah, they're rough.
Then you have the country ports on GBA, which are, like, super bright because they're overcompensating for the screen. And it's just, it looks horrible. It looks disgusting.
They look okay on the GBA screen. They don't look good on like a Game Boy player. That was actually my wife grew up with the GBA ports, not the Super Nintendo versions. So she still thinks the Super Nintendo version looks very strange. But yeah, there was a Game Boy Color port of the first Donkey Kong Country. I don't know that they ever did the later ones, but it's like crazy because it's one of those things where it's like, wow, like they really did, like they ported the whole game. A lot of the assets look really nice, like because essentially that's porting it to like an NES, you know, like as far as hardware goes. And they did a really good job. But that screen size on like the minecart levels is just cruel.
Yeah.
Can't see anything.
It's like Jurassic Park. It's like it's technically impressive, but you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. We just asked if we could.
Yeah.
Not if we should.
Not if we should.
But let's run through. If you had to pick some games from each of these, let's run through kind of our ideal games. Because like we mentioned, the games that have leaked in the list are not necessarily the games that are coming out. They're just the games that are theoretically being tested with this emulator. So give me a Game Boy game.
Okay, so my Game Boy game, in honor of Advance Wars having a horrible year and just horrible releases all the time, is Game Boy Wars, the Japan exclusive Game Boy game, which within the same Wars franchise. So this is like a precursor to Advance Wars. It would just be cool as a novelty to see the game that led up to Advance Wars.
Yeah.
There's nothing special. I don't even really think there's much of a story to it. It would just be a curiosity. And I know that we've received Japan exclusive games in NSO services before. So This is one that I would enjoy seeing.
Yeah, is it, would you need to, could you get away with playing it without it being translated?
Probably not.
Okay.
It would be very difficult. I think if you were just to translate it, at the very least, the UI elements.
Yeah. I can skip through the story, but
yeah,
I need to know what, I had trouble on the menu for Puyo Puyo, so that, you could have translated it a little bit. Well, my Game Boy pick would, obviously, as any listener of this show knows, be Lunar Chase. Just because there is a finished English version of that game that Nintendo owns. They produced the localization that they've just never released.
And the DSiWare game is not the same thing, right?
No, totally different game. Awesome game, but totally different game. I say totally. It's a sequel. Like a very direct sequel to Lunar Chase or X or 3D Space Tank or whatever you call it in your particular region.
It's like the inverse of Star Fox 2. It's a sequel to a game that never came out.
Yeah. It did come out in Japan.
Yeah, okay.
Just never, it was literally one of those things. It's kind of like, what was the Final Fantasy game they made for America? Was that Final Fantasy Adventure?
Oh, Mystic Quest. Yeah.
Mystic Quest. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where it was literally made because Americans are dumb.
Right.
Lunar Chase was localized for Americans, and then Nintendo of America was like, nah, the Americans are dumb. They won't be able to figure out this game. So it's one of those games, I want it to come out just to prove to the people of the past that no, I can play the 3D Space Tank game. I'm gonna DM Dylan Cuthbert on Twitter and be like, don't worry, I figured it out. You can rest easy.
Another documentary.
It turns out you were right. English-speaking people can play the game that an English-speaking person created.
Especially with rewind features and save states.
True. Yeah. Oh, I've been replaying Shining Force on the Genesis NSO.
Yeah.
And
that's gotta be super helpful for a game.
Oh, it's great. Because occasionally an enemy does now and then in that game, an enemy will hit twice or something like that, or get a crit hit or something. And I'll just be like, screw it, and rewind and make them re-roll their hit so it doesn't crit. There you go. Great. Or if I miss, then it's no, I didn't. Go back.
So
and
what's
try
the
it
logic for RNG in that game? Is it a set or is it?
It seems to. I think it just rolls every time. Have you played Shining Force?
No, I've played a little bit of it, but not enough to be familiar.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure just anytime it goes into the actual after you around, I think it's when you hit attack. As it goes into the battle screen, I'm pretty sure at some point, when you hit attack, it rolls, and it truly is random every time. And so if you just rewind to right before the actual attack is started, it'll re-roll the attack chance. So you can totally cheese it, which is really nice.
Yeah, I bring that up because on the Fire Emblem games for the Game Boy Advance, it's a set number. So it's literally a list of numbers in a row. And
oh, sure.
Basically,
so it's not actually random.
Right. It's just a hidden list of numbers, and you can burn the numbers in different ways. But if you were to just hit a save state and just always load that save state back up again and just play the game exactly as you were, nothing would change.
Yeah. Yeah, that's honestly the first thing I try whenever I play any retro RPG on one of these services. Is I find it very interesting how that stuff works.
Yeah.
So it's always whenever the first time I'm playing that game and one of my characters misses, it's okay, let's see if I can re-roll this. Or in Breath of Fire, I remember I could re-roll on random encounters to get different enemies if I got one that was too hard.
Yeah. Saves coming in RPGs is actually really fun.
Yeah, well yeah, you get an interesting insight into how some of that stuff works the more you mess with it.
my Game Boy Color game is Kirby Tilt and Tumble.
Ooh.
For the express reason of I've been thinking about this game because there's a tilt mini game within Forgotten Land on mm-hmm. Switch. And this is a game that requires motion controls. It was a cart that would have some sort of gyro capability. And you could really only play it on, I believe, like the tilt controls would only really work if your cart was sticking up outright, which upright.
Right.
So it would only work on Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance, like the original models, so not for the SPs or the Micro. So NSO might be a way to revisit this game that's been kind of locked away to just a couple of models of consoles. Yeah, I'm not sure if this game is like any good or not, but it would be fun to see that play out.
It's an interesting historical one because I do feel like it was one of, if not the first times Nintendo did motion controls.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it's very iconic to them now.
Right.
So yeah, an interesting early example of that. My Game Boy Color pick would be either Mario Tennis or Mario Golf. I think I prefer Mario Tennis on Game Boy Color. These are, of course, the first instance of the Mario Sports RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think the Game Boy Advance ones are probably objectively better, I have so much nostalgia for Mario Tennis on Game Boy Color. I have replayed the single player mode on that recently, and I just think it's great, and it has such a weird, unique vibe to it. If you haven't played it, it's, you know, what stuff like Golf Story is hugely inspired by it.
Yeah.
And it's just a fantastic game. And I feel like that's a fairly safe bet.
A lot of those Camelot sports games have been making their way to NSO. We just got Mario Golf recently.
I will also, one bonus one for Game Boy Color that I wrote down was Toy Story Racer.
Okay.
Because I think that game is, I used to use that as a testing game at work for Game Boy Colors. It's fascinating because it uses pre-rendered backgrounds. So it essentially plays like a movie of the track as the background, but on a Game Boy Color. So like it's not
playing like a video file?
Essentially, like it's like a slideshow, but it's, you know, at a decent
frame rate. It's like a GIF, right? Like,
yeah.
Or it's just showing the images in sequence.
But it allows you, like, it's taking you through like a full, like it's Toy Story. So you're going through like a bedroom and stuff, and it's taking you on like essentially a Hot Wheels track type thing. And so like, you'll like go up like under a table and then up over a bed. And it's like very 3D. Like it's using like a pre-rendered 3D environment as the background. And then you're essentially kind of just moving left and right ultimately along this thing. And like, if you speed up or slow down, the background kind of speeds up or slows down. And I don't think it's good, but I just think it's really cool and like surprising that it works as well as it does. And yeah, there's no way that would ever end up on here because I'm sure it's some sort of weird legal thing. I don't even know who originally made it.
Well, Disney's.
Oh, it's Activision. Okay, so it'll be on Game Pass.
Okay, there you go. I was gonna say that like Disney's you know, their copyright or their little like their company information shows up on Smash Brothers now, so
that's true.
You know, they've already made the deal with the devil. I guess we're doing bonus Game Boy Color games.
Yeah, I'll throw in a bonus one.
Wario Land 3. Only because I'm a big Wario Land 4 fan, and I have one of my best friends is he says that Wario Land 3 is better. So I would just like to give that a shot in order to prove one way or the other.
Yeah. Like to be educated before you
yes.
just make any assumptions. I can respect that.
Are we doing Game Boy Advance games?
Yeah, go ahead and throw out a Game Boy Advance game. This is the easiest and yet hardest one because I feel like we both have a bunch of Game Boy Advance games we could suggest.
So there are plenty of games that I should say, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
Because Bomberman Tournament is the wildest game ever made. This is a Hudson Bomberman game, but it plays like a Link to the Past, and it has Pokemon elements where you're like capturing monsters and you have them fight and you can like fuse them.
Okay.
It's weird because you'll be wandering and exploring this world. and you'll have to battle enemies that are just in the overworld, just like you would in A Link to the Past. But you can't just run up to them with your sword and slash them a couple times. You have to drop a bomb and then run away and then wait for it to blow up. Or like, and sometimes it doesn't blow up in the right spot, so you have to figure out a way to corner it. Sometimes you're going to hurt yourself in the process. It doesn't make any sense. It shouldn't work. But it's got some like really good music, and I have a lot of fond memories of it. And NSO, I believe, is created for games that you're not going to play the entirety of, but you might mess around with for an hour or two. And I don't know. They're curiosities. And I think yes. Bomberman Tournament is a very wild curiosity.
Okay, I like that pick. I am going to, in an attempt to avoid any of the Game Boy Advance games that anyone would expect me to pick, but maybe I gave it away by talking about Shining Force earlier, I'm going to suggest Shining Force Resurrection of the Dark Dragon, which is a remake of the original Shining Force for Game Boy Advance, that adds in some new characters and mechanics and scenarios. And was just a really good remake. Of course, I'd also would, you know, still like Star X and Wing Commander Prophecy, but nobody's putting those on anything.
I will say Shining Force, the GBA remake, I bought that like a year before the Genesis NSO came out. So I was like, oh, cool, Shining Force. This is a game I've been wanting to get into. Like, oh, wait, I actually have that already. I need to play it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one that, like, because Shining Force, the franchise, despite some efforts, has been dead ever since the creators left to go make Mario sports games, actually.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was a really cool, like, it's a, like kind of the only good Shining Force product to come out since Shining Force 3, which we never even got in its entirety in America. So
Shining Soul
is a weird game because it kind of is an attempt to remake the first Shining Force, but as an action RPG.
Yes. Also on GBA. Which,
yes. I don't like it that I played a lot of it as a kid because I was just desperate for anything Shining Force related.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's
another curiosity.
Yeah, you can throw it on there. I think there were two of those on GBA. I'm disappointed that they never remade the other Shining Force games for GBA. They just did the first one, and I think it performed fine. But they never went back to them.
Oh, let me throw up my my spicy what games I don't want to see on GBA,
because I'm curious.
So I'm not sure. I'm not seeing it on this image, but I believe in one of the images that was floating around Twitter is that they were testing Mega Man Battle Network 5. I love the Battle Network games. For me, Mega Man is Battle Network. Like, I don't see Mega Man as a
was jump that and the shoot first game. One you played?
It was the first one I played.
Okay, so Battle Network for you is Mega Man Legends for me.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. I might have seen other Mega Man games, but the ones that I've played and really got attached to was the Battle Network ones. In fact, I remember getting network transmission for the GameCube and being very excited about it, and then realizing it's a platformer and being very disappointed right afterwards. So the Battle Network, it's the series, it's like it's a mainline Capcom Mega Man series. Like, if you do the final Smash in Smash Brothers Ultimate with Mega Man.exe from Battle Network shows up, and they've done a whole lot of these collections up until like Mega Man Z and ZX, which were both GBA and ZX and DS games respectively. They've done those legacy collections, they've done classic Mega Man, they've done Mega Man X. Battle Network is next in line. And it would be tragic to see them come to NSO and not get their own legacy collections.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's not the Mega Man game I would pick, but I'll take it. As you kind of alluded to earlier, I like these NSO games to not necessarily be the things that I would actually think of.
Yeah. You put Metabots on there.
Put Star Wars Episode 3 on there.
Star X, put it on there.
Yeah. Nobody, you wouldn't even have to pay for the rights. I'll bet nobody even, who knows who owns that game at this point.
You can just upload it. No one's going to fight you.
Yeah, you just throw the ROM on there, and yeah, I dare you to see if anybody will actually fight. I feel like a good safe bet, I think the both 2D Metroids on Game Boy Advance will be on there for sure.
Oh, Amazing Mirror. If they do like a virtual link cable, then you could do multiplayer. Oh, sure.
That's a good idea. They should do a Four Swords thing.
They should always do a Four Swords thing. They should just, always.
No matter what perpetuity. The context is. Yeah. Yeah, whatever you're doing, you should do a Four Swords four thing. Swords.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about multiplayer, but that would be. There's a lot of Game Boy Advance multiplayer games that I just never was in a situation to play the multiplayer. So this could be really finally, cool from Super that Circuit. Angle.
Let's do a stream.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess speaking of accessories. Would they release a controller for NSO for either Game Boy or Game Boy Advance or both?
What's ridiculous is that it would just be a Joy-Con with less. You know, like.
There might be a market for that, you know, slightly bigger buttons. Well, and, just a and D-pad.
Would it be split to connect to both sides of the Switch? Or would it, like the other controllers, just be a standalone controller? In which case, is the Game Boy without a screen?
Yeah.
Is it just a small square?
It's just, they remove the top half. It's just
Exactly. Like, it's just this little, like, cube with two buttons and a D-pad.
Got start and select, and that's all you need.
Yeah. Though it would be, I don't know, it would be a good opportunity for them to do a D-pad Joy-Con, which apparently they'll never ever do.
Was there this might be in like a hoary thing, but was there like a Game Boy like a super Game Boy controller?
Oh yeah, there was one for the GameCube that had a larger D-pad. Yeah, that thing's worth some money now.
Yeah, so I mean that's not exactly
they
like
could
an
do
official
that controller.
Maybe you know they would have to. It's a little bit outside the scope of what they typically do. They're trying to do like these loving like recreations of controllers that they officially made. And
the Game Boy Advance is almost controller shaped.
It is almost controller shaped. Like,
that'd be the closest one if you wanted to do something.
You really screw us over and give us like a Game Boy Micro as a controller.
It's just tiny.
It's the Game Boy Micro is probably smaller than a Joy-Con, right?
Probably. It might be. But yeah, with that, I'd say it's about time to call it an episode.
Mm-hmm.
If you at home have any Game Boy games that you would like to play on your Switch, let us know in an email. But more importantly, like I said before, write to us about Majora's Mask, because we are going to be talking about that very soon. Unless we have the schedule wrong, I'm pretty sure that episode should be coming out next Friday. So look forward to that. You can follow us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. Email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can review this podcast on your podcast app of choice. And I think that's all the things. Thank you very much for listening. Alex, thank you for joining me this week.
Thanks for editing.
You're welcome. And we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.